You've heard about MacDeck Day, but have you seen Charlotte's ties to the American Revolution? On this week's FAQ City podcast, host Nick Delacanal uncovers some Revolutionary War artifacts in the Queen City and even some mysterious Masonic symbols. Listen to the FAQ City podcast now on NPR One and on WFAE.org/FAQ City. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. This is the week, possibly even the day, that the Carolina Panthers may get a new owner. The NFL is meeting in Atlanta today to decide if David Tepper becomes that man. And we find out more about him and what his ownership of the Panthers may mean for the team, the fans, the city, later in the program. First, we hear from a woman who has been making news of late because of her social media posts. These posts were made a few months ago, but are just now gaining media attention and causing more than a ripple among city officials and some voters. They come from LaWanna Mayfield, who is serving her fourth term as a Democrat, representing District 3 on Charlotte City Council. We've read the posts and we've heard the reaction, but we wanted to hear LaWanna Mayfield's response to that reaction in more than the sound bites that we've gotten from the news. She accepted our invitation to be here, so welcome back to the program. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you for the invitation.
How long have you been on? We're just talking about this off the air. How long have you been on social media? And good God, why?
Right. So I would say I started on social media back in 2007-08 because people forget that I used to be a community organizer, mm-hmm. marching and protesting in Charlotte. And it really became more prevalent in 2011 when I ran for office because you have to be on social media.
Okay. So the post that first got people's attention was the post about 9/11. And it was pretty negative. Did it surprise you that it was so negative? Has any of this surprised you?
Unfortunately, none of this surprises me. But it also, if I was in college and I was doing a thesis on people and how they react, the reactions are more similar to what I would expect, opposed to challenging my thought process of questioning what is around us. Mm-hmm. We should be questioning certain things, but even at that, even if you don't agree with me, which you should not agree with 100% of what I say, if we believe in freedom of speech and freedom of thought, you should respect the fact that I land someplace that you don't. Just like I respect the fact that you land someplace completely different than where I do.
Did the negative reaction outweigh any positive reaction?
For me, no. The positive was overwhelming because I had a number of family members who also lost their family and whose lives have forever been changed that reached out to me. I had organizations that reached out to me. They have had very similar questions, and they said no one would even listen to us. Everyone tells us just move on, get on with our grief.
You made the post that we're going to talk about, and I have not read your Twitter feed because I'm not on Twitter, the post that we're going to talk about were actually posted months ago, and just in the last couple weeks, we began to hear about them. So why the timing, do you think?
That is the other question. So I wish you had had a chance to read it. What it was an article where another young black mother was doing an interview, and she was crying and screaming, why did they have to kill my baby? Why couldn't they have shot him in the arm, shot him in the leg? Why did they have to kill him? And I shared that post. And the statement that I wrote was a statement that, in my opinion, in conversations that I've had with other people, that I believe, even though it hasn't started under this current administration, honestly, you started seeing a increase of, honestly, hatred. And this divide in black America and white America and poor and wealthy in 2008 after that election. And this discourse of everything that our former president attempted to do, we're going to stop. And this change. So I said, from the definition of terrorism, we have officers out there. And this article wasn't even about Charlotte, but it was talking about the increase of brutal assaults and or killings of unarmed black, brown, and poor people, and there being no justice for them. And what is the definition of terrorism? That terrorism is growing under this administration. And I said 45 because I refuse to put that individual's name in the same sentence as the leader of our free world. So I said hashtag 45 terrorism has grown, and shared this article.
For people who are listening who are not familiar with what we're talking about, or with your tweets, or the controversy surrounding these very social media posts.
There's someone out there?
Yeah, one hopes. We've actually segued from two different topics here, because there are two different topics that have caused this controversy. Let's start with the 9/11 stuff, and then we'll move on to the police. You, in your post about 9/11, you questioned whether the World Trade Center and the Pentagon attacks were real.
No, I didn't. That was never what I questioned. That's where the challenge comes in.
You said we're still waiting for someone to produce pieces of the alleged plane that crashed into the World Trade Center?
And I took full responsibility, because when I was typing it, and I did type in alleged, mm-hmm. I sent out a long letter, one, to my constituents, because honestly, that's the only people I felt like I needed to respond to. And I apologized and I removed the word alleged. But what I stood by is the fact that there is questions about what happened, and the fact that if you have something, and whatever that something is, if it falls, if it's hit, mm-hmm. it is not doing what was said. But again, it was me sharing an article.
So what you're saying,
and the article was talking about something different. So it's not like I just said, hey, I'm going to talk about this event. It was an article that was shared from a Swedish professor.
All right. So let's be clear. You're not questioning that airplanes flew into the World Trade Center?
No. What I'm not questioning is that towers came down. I'm not questioning that lives were lost.
Let's go back to the airplane. Are you questioning that airplanes flew into
the
building?
So I'm not questioning that airplanes flew in the building. I'm questioning that our government showed that loss of life mm-hmm. is acceptable, because there are a lot of things that happened that transpired. You can go back. And however you land on this issue, even when it happened, you can go back and pull up video of reporters that earlier that day, where minutes before you had reporters questioning, I just heard an explosion. So you have people that have documented this.
Luana, this was on the Today Show live on television.
Right. We say it was on the Today Show live on television. And earlier this year, which you and I just talked about off the air, where you had this montage of multiple news stations saying the exact same thing. And everyone was outraged about this new idea of logic of what was said. Now, we can say that I look at recently, we lost Barbara Bush, God rest her soul. On Tuesday afternoon is when it was shared all over the media, breaking news, Barbara Bush passed. If you go back to that Monday night's council meeting, and this isn't just creating something. If you go back to that Monday night's council meeting that we had, right when we announced that we were adjourning for the evening, it had popped up on social media, on my social media, on Yahoo News. I said, everyone, we need to pause and have a moment of silence. Barbara Bush just passed away.
Okay.
Nothing was said Monday night on the news. Nothing was said Tuesday morning. Tuesday afternoon, breaking news in the middle of the day, saying Barbara Bush has passed away. That was already on social media Monday night.
Could Yahoo have been wrong?
Could they have been wrong, considering she had passed away and it was out? But what I'm saying is we should be questioning. It's not a problem to question.
No, but when you...
That's the challenge. But if we're going to talk about
But I saw the airplanes fly into the
buildings. I never questioned whether or not the airplanes hit the building. And that's where I think the biggest disconnect has happened in this conversation. I never questioned where the planes hit. After typing alleged, and I recognized that, and I owned that, and I responded to that, and I removed that. Because it wasn't about the alleged planes hitting. That was not what I was challenging.
It was about the buildings coming down as a result. You linked to an article in that social media post to a website called awarenessact.com, and it stated its official European scientific journal concludes 9/11 was a controlled demolition. Why did you choose to link to that site? Because others have said that site, Awareness Act, is a classic conspiracy site that focuses on aliens and the New World Order with little regard for science.
I read the article. I shared the article. I wrote what I wrote, and in parentheses, I said, from the conspiracy theorists in me.
Are you a conspiracy theorist?
I think to a large part, most people are. They just don't acknowledge it. When you look at everything that has happened, and especially, and I'm not going to speak for other African-Americans or other people of color or biracial people. I'm only going to speak for me. What is written supposedly in our laws and in our Constitution are a direct conflict of how we are treated in this nation. So if we go back to the very beginning, we know that language and legislation and poverty was created through legislation. We know that after our war, when government created a GI Bill, we know that the language in that GI Bill said that it would be accessible to white men. Mm-hmm. We know that the PWA, the Public Works Administration, even though only around for a good 2-3 years, whole focus and goal was to go around and segregate communities. We're still fighting the impacts of concentrated poverty today. We know that in poor black and brown communities, we have law enforcement that is done very differently than it is done in other areas. These are things that have been legislated.
Help me to understand why what that has to do.
With my conspiracy?
Yeah.
Right. Because as a black person, you're telling me that I'm supposed to trust the system when the system has historically, fundamentally failed me and my community.
But if the system is lying about 9/11 and
I'm not talking about that, still talking about 9/11. I'm talking, you asked me why would I say the conspiracy theorist in me.
Okay.
I'm saying looking at
trust.
The whole.
You don't trust.
It's not a point of trust. This nation has proven daily that being black in America is a liability. That's what this nation has proven to us.
But that seems to me to be a different topic.
And to me, it isn't. And that's where I think one of the other disconnects come, because it's not a different topic for me. It is all tied together. Every day that I turn on the television, and unfortunately, I did not do like you and stay off of social media, but every time you tune in to Twitter or Facebook or any of them or watch the news, you hear of another assault. You hear of another attack of an individual. You hear how the justice system failed one individual. And the only difference in a lot of these conversations is the pigment of their skin.
So tell me why 17 years after 9/11 actually occurred, why you felt the need to tweet about it.
So that's not the question. The question is, why are people so upset because I shared this particular post and said what I said when I have said so many other things that people have never picked up on, when I've talked about the fact that we're in a housing crisis and that until we have a real conversation of how we got here, we're never going to be able to move forward? Why have we never talked about the fact that when I shared other posts about the educational system, that's never gotten any traction?
But
it's just the idea of because someone didn't like it, they chose to run with it.
But as a leader,
and white, and an activist.
Okay.
So we cannot forget.
Okay. As a
it's
leader,
not separate.
As a community activist, as a city council person, et cetera, is it helpful to, because you're talking about these other concerns that you have that are legitimate.
They got no attention.
Got no attention, but they were legitimate concerns. And now you post about 9/11 and you post a conspiracy theory. Is that helpful? Does it help your credibility?
And that's where, again, I'm going to challenge the whole question, because the fact that I shared it is not, the issue is not the fact that I shared it. The issue should be, why are you more concerned about this post opposed to all the other posts that were dealing with everyday issues?
You have an answer?
I just threw
you
out a
an
thought.
Answer for that? Do you know why?
It's my opinion.
No.
And I'm allowed to have it.
Yes, you are. We have to take a break. We'll come back with more with LaWanna Mayfield in just a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
WFAE is proud to launch a new investigative podcast called She Says, which looks at one sexual assault survivor's efforts to bring her assailant to justice. Find out more at WFAE.org/she says.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking to District 3 City Councilwoman Luana Mayfield because she's been in the news recently because of some posts that raised the ire of some people and were considered controversial. We've been talking about 9/11. Let's move on to the one that is more recent and the one that has really caused some consternation among people, and that is your comments about police. Back in March, you made these, but they're just now coming to light for some reason. And they were spotlighted in the media. On March 26th, you tweeted, quote, being black in America under 45, who is President Trump, you didn't put President Trump's name in it for the reasons you gave us in the last segment, being black in America under 45 has created homegrown terrorists wearing blue uniforms. You're not alone in your concern about that kind of activity and about some police officers around America treating African Americans, particularly African American men, in very unprofessional ways and in ways that have caused these people to lose their lives. You're not alone in that. But why did you bring number 45? Why did you bring President Trump into this? This has been going on. It went on under Obama. It went under President Bush, under President Clinton, under President Eisenhower, under President Truman. I can keep going back.
Code switching.
What does that mean?
The fact that 45, because again, as I said before, I'm not going to put leader of the free world and his name in the same sentence, has the language that he has used, the code words that he has used, the fact that you have an individual drive their vehicle into a crowd of protesters who are clearly racist, and your comment is that people did bad things on both sides, the fact that you've had a number of recent events that directly brought contention between white America and people of color America, and the comments that have come out of the White House, if there's a comment at all, have been in support of or downplaying the violence caused by white America. You look at the mass assaults and what has come out of the White House when these individuals, unfortunately, who have been white, have gone in and committed mass assault versus that person who is of color, because Muslim is not a religion, is not a race, it's a religion. But then we target and say Muslims are terrorists. So I personally became really irritated with the only time you hear the word terrorist or terrorism is when it was identified as someone assumed to be a Muslim.
But that predates the president.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, it does.
It's always been there. You're absolutely right. But under this particular president, the increase of assaults has happened. Under this particular president, the increase of racism is growing. Under this particular president, the increase of assaults of people in uniform to poor black and brown people has increased,
Do you have empirical evidence to support that?
That's a real good question, because I said it to a reporter. So we're just looking at just the numbers of individuals, which I also shared and received no attention, because you have people who are tracking it, looking at just 2016, really looking at 2015, looking at prior to when you had choices of who was going to become the next president, until May of 2018, how many individuals that are poor or of color have been assaulted and or killed, men, women, and children, by an officer of the law who is supposed to protect and serve? And the morale, what does that do to the good officers who are out there? Because there's also a piece of this where people try to frame it as, I'm talking about all officers. No, I'm talking about the bad ones.
Well, what does it do to morale of the Charlotte-Mecklenburg police, since we're sitting here in Charlotte-Mecklenburg, when a city council person compares them to terrorists?
Ah, see, that's the challenge again, because I didn't compare them to terrorists. But the ones who are out there terrorizing our communities, they need to be called out. There's a separation there that people don't want to acknowledge. If you go back to my tweet, then you have to, you can't separate the fact that I shared a post of yet another mother who lost their child. There was not an arrest, but yet we have arrested white males that have gone in and committed mass shootings without there being any type of infraction without them being assaulted, without them being hurt in any kind of way.
Are you talking about the mass shootings like in Florida and San Bernardino?
In Florida, in San Bernardino, in South Carolina.
Most of the perpetrators of those shootings die.
Oh, no, most of them do not.
Yes, they do.
Most of them do.
Yes, they do.
So are we going to say that we're not even going to acknowledge?
Of the police. Most of them
I'm not talking about the person that commits suicide. I'm talking about an individual who is arrested after committing a shooting and is placed into a police car.
Okay.
And then driven, opposed to an individual who is running from the police, who has no weapon on them whatsoever,
right,
who is a child playing in a park, playing with a water gun just like any other child would do, who is sitting in a vehicle driving with their child in the back seat and who is shot in the head right next to their fiance. We can't keep acting like these things are not happening. No, that is not saying all officers are horrible, but there are officers out there who, by definition of terrorism, who create terror, who are creating fear. The pure definition. There are officers out there who are doing just that. And if we're not going to acknowledge it, because as elected officials, we get to create policy. We get to mandate that before you get a gun or before you're behind the wheel and get a community that you're going to be working within, you need to go through a racial justice and social justice and racial class to understand the impacts that have happened before you go in the community.
Let me play you some comments from reaction comments from CMPD Chief Kerr Putney.
It's hard for us to recruit. It's hard for us to retain. And then it's almost hypocritical to say we want you to be diverse. And then you layer on allegations that paint us all with a broad brush. Highly disappointed, but again, the positive is our people have been extremely professional. They went through some of the toughest times in my career a couple of years ago, and they get through everything, including this. When they go low, we go high. I think that was said before. I trust our people to do just that. Whenever we're painted with a broad brush, it's offensive. We've been talking about officers who win medals of merit for putting their lives on the line. And then to be put in a category like that, it's hard to stomach. And there should always be community accountability. I might not be able to hold people accountable, but community can.
What do you think he's saying there?
I think he's saying a lot, and I'm never going to speak against our chief. But I also recognize the chief is a part of an organization that demands loyalty. And I also recognize that the city of Charlotte has paid out numerous lawsuits because of how officers have interacted. I also recognize that the city of Charlotte, because of current systems that we have, where we have no control because we have a citizens review board, when you've had chiefs and you've had officers that have reported or became whistleblowers, since we always want to put a negative on the one that's telling the truth, someone who abuses their power, that individual has been blackballed. I also recognize that we have had officers who have committed atrocities and then a board put them back on the force, and that overrode the chief. So then what do? You don't even get the
The board you're referring to is the Citizens Review Board.
Again, look at the history. You've had Robert Dawkins and you've had Safe Coalition Democracy North Carolina in here. We have a long history of the members being officers themselves, retired, or family members.
Are you saying that the CMPD is corrupt?
I'm saying officers have an opportunity to be great. We have great officers, but we also have some really bad officers out there. And if we, as elected officials, can create the language, we can remove the bad ones so that the good ones can continue to shine. I'm not going to blanket everyone. That's the piece, Mike. It's not about everyone, but if we don't even acknowledge that there are bad officers out there, we're continuing a cycle.
It's one thing to acknowledge that there are bad officers, because there are, and there is video evidence to prove it beyond a shadow of a doubt.
And then they don't even serve jail time. They walk away or go to a new police department.
And there are certainly problems with the system, but do you understand Kerr Putney and other people who have been critical of you saying that you use too broad a brush when you just say the word terrorist in conjunction with the police?
I'm going to challenge that because, again, the definition of terrorism is what is happening in poor black and brown communities.
But just as not every Muslim is a terrorist, in fact, the vast majority...
But we use it.
I understand that. But two wrongs don't make a right. Because if the vast majority of Muslims are law-abiding, peace-loving, God-loving individuals, it is wrong to say all Muslims are terrorists, because it is not true. So if it is also, if it's the case that there are bad apples in police departments around the country, is it fair to say that the police are terrorists when it's not true? Not all of them are true.
So where did I write? Did I say all police?
But when you say they are terrorists.
No, sir. What did I, but you just read it. So what did I say? Under 45. Mm-hmm. What specifically?
Well, first of all, I don't think that's a fair criticism,
because we can disagree on that.
The president has been criticized for a lot of things, some of them with justification, and he's been criticized for destroying or harming or trying to harm the very structures of our government that
he's
keep this.
He's also gone to court for racist policies regarding his housing.
Let me finish my thought. I mean, he's going after his Justice Department in a way that no other president ever has.
Yeah.
And he's been criticized for that. And you can either be on his side or you can be against him, and you can find justification for both. How is what he's doing different from what you just did?
So what I'm going to say is, just as people are upset because it still falls under freedom of speech. So I'm telling a reality that is happening in the community.
There are consequences to speech, and a person who is on city council, I think, has to temper their comments, don't you think?
So that's, can we challenge that a little bit?
Oh, yeah, but you can tell the truth, but isn't there a way to couch the truth in terms that people hear you?
So what I'm going to say is, people are hearing me. We're having this conversation right now because people aren't hearing me. So just as there are people out there who are upset and who have had negative comments, there are also a lot of people out there who have emailed, who have called, who have said thank you for speaking the truth. Because we have to at least, we're never going to fix the problem if we refuse to acknowledge the problem, mm-hmm. or if we keep trying to placate because we are so afraid of upsetting someone about the problem. People throughout the nation are being killed, and some of the individuals that are doing that killing are sanctioned by government. We gave them a badge, a uniform, a gun. And opposed to protecting and serving, whatever bias you had before getting into that role, it is now playing out in community. So for all the great officers out there that do amazing work, these bad officers, there should be a clear process to remove them. Opposed to numerous officers that I have spoken to, who I know and who I am friends with, that were blackballed when they attempted to tell what really happened, when they attempted to stop their fellow officer from assaulting physically an individual.
But what you just said, people can hear, because you didn't use inflammatory words like terrorist.
Why do you think it's inflammatory to tell? That's
because people react to it.
Right. The reaction is, there's a reaction there, but why is it inflammatory for me to say terrorist in this context, which for a lot of people they feel, but we're not talking about the inflammatory nature when we try to deem a whole segment of community. When you say Muslims are terrorists, that's deeming a whole segment. When you say terrorists are being created, I think that's a different conversation.
I have to move to a different topic with different guests.
But yes,
before,
sir.
Before you go, I want to get your impression of something that the former governor and the former mayor
Yeah,
Pat McCrory had to say, because you have been a member of the Black Political Caucus.
Yeah.
And he said something.
I am a member, not have been. Right. I'm an active member.
He said that the Black Political Caucus, essentially, I'm going to paraphrase here, mm-hmm. has too much power, and that he's concerned about diversity, given that the Black Political Caucus seems to pick all of the winners in the primary. What's your reaction to that?
That's code switching, because he had no concern about the diversity of the city. For the 14 plus years that he was the mayor, and when this city was predominantly white, there weren't ever conversations about outside of minority community about the lack of diversity. That is code words. That is what we need to challenge as a society.
Is what he said any more inflammatory than what you feel you've said?
No. But it's, again, creating dialogue and conversation. At the end of the day, November 2019, for the people that live within the city of Charlotte, because to be perfectly honest, those that live outside the city, you can't vote anyway. But for those who live within the city in November, if you feel in 2019, if you feel like what I've said is so offensive and I'm not telling the truth, you have the ability to vote. If that's what it's going to take for people to get out their house and stop complaining and actually go vote, then go vote.
LaWanna Mayfield, Charlotte City Council, District 3. Thank you for coming here this morning.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. We will likely know this week, maybe even today, whether David Tepper will become the new owner of the Carolina Panthers. NFL owners are meeting in Atlanta right now, and among the topics they'll be discussing is Mr. Tepper, who has signed an agreement in principle to buy the Panthers from Jerry Richardson at a record price for an NFL team. He's already a partial owner of the Steelers and is therefore known to the other owners and has already been vetted by the league. He seems like a shoe-in. So what might this ownership change mean for the team, the players, the fans, and the city? You can't predict the future, but you can turn to people who can make some very educated prognostications. And here to do just that is Rick Rothacker, business reporter for the Charlotte Observer. He is in our Spirit Square studio once again. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And Eric Spanberg is joining us by phone from the Business Journal from Atlanta, where the NFL owners are meeting. Eric, thank you for joining us as well. Oh, let me turn you on, Eric. Thank you for joining us as well. There you go.
Thank you for having me.
I'm a professional, Eric. You noticed that, right?
I know that.
All right. Meet David Tepper.
This has been a hell of a week. A kid who couldn't afford to go to an NFL game. A kid who couldn't afford to go to an NFL game until well into his 20s is on the verge of getting the NFL's approval to buy the Carolina Panthers. Not too shabby.
That's David Tepper speaking at commencement exercises for his alma mater, Carnegie Mellon, sounding pretty excited, very emotional, and the antithesis of the quiet, reserved Jerry Richardson. Is this typical of David Tepper? Rick.
From what we hear, he wears his personality on his sleeve. He's a hedge fund manager. He's made lots of gutsy calls during his career, including buying Bank of America stock when probably a lot of people around here were staying away at the bottom of the financial crisis. And so he's sort of a gutsy, emotional guy from what we can tell.
Okay. Eric, I'll get your impression of David Tepper when we come back. We have to take a break, and we'll talk more about him, what it means for the team and the city, and the likelihood of his being the owner by the end of the day today. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're sitting here with Rick Rothacker, business reporter for the Charlotte Observer, and Eric Spanberg, who's in Atlanta at the NFL meetings. He is a senior staff reporter for the Charlotte Business Journal, and we are told that if you're listening to us in the morning, David Tepper has gone into the NFL meetings right now. We just heard a cut from David at Carnegie Mellon, sounding fairly emotional about becoming the potential new owner of the Panthers. He's a very wealthy man, had huge success, Eric, as the head of a hedge fund. Was his becoming almost verklempt at that commencement address the result of his reflecting back on his hard scrabble start and about the prospect of owning a team when in his youth he couldn't even afford to buy a ticket? Or was there more to it than that?
Well, I think absolutely it was. I think also that's the first and last time you'll ever hear a crowd in Pittsburgh hear the words Carolina Panthers. But I think certainly, as Rick said, if you look back at the history of David Tepper's business career, I mean, he's a very blunt-spoken guy. He's got a pretty sharp sense of humor. His humor can get a little edgy. And so it's going to be interesting to see how that works out. Obviously, Charlotte has had more than its share of controversy with sports owners, the current Panthers owner included. But there haven't been a lot of sort of out there, in-your-face kind of owners. And so if David Tepper takes that track, That'll certainly be a bit of a new angle for Charlotte sports fans.
Yeah, I think the last owner who was out front and very public was George Shinn. He didn't say anything that might have offended very many people. He offended them more by his actions than he did through his words. And, of course, Michael Jordan is invisible, and Jerry Richardson is fairly invisible, too. You're a business reporter, but you're both business reporter. But, Rick, you write about this in the Observer, and he's a business guy, and you said he's done some pretty remarkable deals that go against intuition that a lot of people have, like you buy Bank of America during the height of the Great Recession. Why would you do that? And he made money as a result of doing that. He just paid a record price for the Carolina Panthers. Everybody else is saying football is going to fall on hard times, that TV ratings are declining, that people are concerned about the future of the sport because of concussions. Mothers won't let their sons play football. So if you don't let a kid play football, how are you going to have any professional players in 20 years? Does he see something? Does he know something that others don't know about football?
He's paying a record price. I think he would probably say he's paying a fair price. You know, we've heard during the process that, you know, even, you know, there was talk of could this go for $3 billion, and everything we've heard about the negotiations, he kind of came in with his initial offer and stuck there, and through all the machinations, it came back to David Tepper. So I think he's known for buying at the right price, so that's helpful for him. And certainly there's questions about the NFL ratings, head injuries, like you said. You know, one thing that happened literally on the day he's signing it that week, the Supreme Court comes out on gambling, and that may, you know, Mark Cuban, the Mavericks, Dallas Mavericks owner, has said, you know, every professional sports franchise just doubled in price.
Yes, I saw that. Why?
Well, the thinking is that, it can increase popularity. If now you're not just rooting for the Cleveland Browns, you're rooting for them to cover the spread, you might start watching TV.
Yeah, does that mean you're going to buy a ticket, or does that mean you're going to watch TV?
I think it could help ratings.
It means you're going to watch.
Yeah. Okay. And there's a lot of questions about whether the leagues are going to try to get a cut of the action. And so I think that'll help.
So you're down there in Atlanta amongst the owners. Did you have a chance to talk to any of them? Are they all carrying rubber stamps into the meeting?
Well, just so you have your hurricane tracker accurate, I'm almost to Atlanta to the meeting. So,
oh, okay. All right.
assuming that 285 is kind to me, I will be there very shortly. But all of the talk leading up to this is that he is an instant approval. As you mentioned earlier, he's been an owner, a minority owner in the Pittsburgh Steelers since 2009. So the league knows him. There are really no questions at all about his financial wherewithal. He's worth an estimated $11 billion, so I can't imagine what would derail this at this point.
And Jerry Richardson is a very powerful, he's been a very powerful part of the NFL Owners Club. He headed up some pretty powerful committees, including I don't know the exact name of the committee, but it's the one that decides where teams will go and whether cities can have new franchises. And he has said that he made sure, to the best of his ability, that the Panthers can't leave or won't leave the Carolinas. Is there any chance? Because if this guy comes in, and he's just paid a record price for a team, and he has therefore raised the value of every other NFL team, aren't they going to look favorably upon him? Aren't they beholden to him? So if he wants to move it to Saskatchewan, they'll let him do it?
Let's start with owners almost always will approve a move or a relocation because they know they could be in the same situation. So this is no different. I think you have to remember two things. First is he's under no financial pressure. It's not like he's leveraged to the hilt because this is an easy check, relatively speaking, for him to write. And secondly, barring some just incredibly divisive, unpleasant, unsuccessful discussion about a new stadium, which is not impossible, he's in a market that has been remarkably consistent and supportive of its NFL team, and it's a place where 60 people are moving in each day, and those are young professionals who have disposable income. So I don't know what would motivate him exactly to move, but it's not impossible.
You want to add to that?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, people like this market. It covers two fast-growing states. If he would try to move, there'd be relocation fees. But just like Eric said, if you're an owner, you don't really want anyone to be hamstrung and not able to do what they want to do to keep their business going.
So he paid $2.275 billion for this. I think he's worth about $11 billion, and $2.2 billion of that purchase price has to be in cash. he's going to write the check.
That's our understanding. I did see a good Forbes piece that there might be a good tax write-off and all, and how this all works. So it may not be that he's pretty good at finances, so he may have a way to make it work down the line.
In his official statement, he said that he has been to town several times. He's learned, quote, a great deal about the community and the team over the past several months. What do we think he learned, Rick?
Well, I mean, when they came in to buy, anyone looking to buy the team got a really good snapshot of their financials, of what they're making. I think they got a feel for the league. They got a feel for the stadium. I think all these guys did their homework of, here's what the Panthers are making, here's what other teams could make as well. And some of those things that people talk about is whether the team could make more money off parking and things like that. And so eventually that might lead to the stadium discussions.
He once worked for Goldman Sachs. He was passed over for promotion at Goldman Sachs by John Corzine, who eventually became, I think, governor of New York. And he was passed over because he had a loud and profane personality. Well, at least that's what they said. And so he went out and started his own hedge fund, and the rest is history. How will Charlotte take to a loud and profane personality? Will it be refreshing? Will it be exciting? Will people just be shocked beyond belief?
Go ahead, Eric.
I was just going to say, you know, I think it's like everything in sports. If they're winning, he'll be brash and fun and confident. And if they're losing, he'll be boorish and unappealing and, you know, not a good fit for Charlotte. So, you know, most fans are with you win or tie, and I think that probably holds true with David Tepper as well.
What did he say about the president? I don't have the quote in front of me. He said some fairly unpleasant things about President Trump. How will that play?
That could be interesting. I mean, there's a very diverse fan base here that, you know, and we didn't see a lot of protests during the with the national anthem with the Panthers, and so that might rub some people wrong. I know we got emails and letters from readers who, when they saw that story, you know, weren't real welcoming of Mr. Tepper.
So he has been described by many sources as an amazing investor and somebody who seems to be able to spot things that other people don't see, and therefore has made a lot of money as a result. Is owning the Panthers an investment, or is it more than an investment? Is this guy a football guy, or is this just another stock or bond?
He sounds like a football guy. He played, I think, at least in high school. He's a part owner of the Steelers. Sounds like he flies to all the games. So as much as any, you know, he's not a former NFL player like Jerry Richardson, but he's someone who seems to care about the game. And I think anyone who buys these teams, usually it's sort of a trophy on your mantle that you were able to buy a team. And so I think he'll bring that perspective as a fan and someone who wants to see the team succeed, not just try to wring every dollar out of the, you know, the soda sales and uniform sales, that kind of stuff.
Well, Eric, you write about business people all the time. I'm sure you've met more than your fair share of them as well. I'm sure they all share something in common, and that would be a drive and an aggressive nature for success, etc. The team, the players, had been hoping to give Mr. Richardson, the current owner, a Super Bowl ring, and that never came true. How long is David Tepper going to be willing to wait for that ring before he starts getting really involved in the day-to-day activities of coaching players, etc.?
Well, you know, that will be interesting to watch, Mike. I think one of the things to keep in mind is that David Tepper has been involved with the Pittsburgh Steelers, and that is a franchise with a lot of tradition, and one of the traditions of the Rooney family, which has owned that team basically forever, is that they don't meddle, they don't change coaches a lot, they don't try to sort of overrule the football experts. So assuming he likes the way the Steelers are running, I think he does, he'll probably go in that direction. But as you mentioned, he, like many business people, is hyper-competitive, and particularly when you talk about a hedge fund trader, he won't probably deal with losing very well, so it will be interesting to see how he kind of, you know, reconciles those two impulses.
What does winning or losing, when you have a stadium in which PSLs have been sold and the games are sold out, whether you come or not, if you see empty seats, they've already been paid for, what does winning or losing do to the bottom line of a team over time?
I think it helps a little bit in the sense of ticket sales. It helps in more people are buying, more people are going to the game and using those tickets, buying beer, buying jerseys, buying food. Overall, it helps. You know, it helps your ratings, and it's a positive for the team.
But I mean, is the TV revenue collective or is it individual? In other words, if the Panthers have terrific ratings when they're on Fox or CBS or whatever, do they get more money or does it just go into the NFL pool?
It's pretty much nationalized, so there's a big pool that's shared evenly among the owners. So if your ratings are terrible, you're still getting paid. But I think overall, it's a good impression.
Does it matter?
Team.
Does it matter that a team wins or loses overall? Because PSLs are sold, the season tickets are sold, the TVs, you're going to be on television or you're not. You're going to get a part of the revenue of the ratings. Does it matter?
Well, let's start with this, Mike. Nobody in the NFL loses financially. I mean, they're all making tons of money. It's the most successful sports league in the world. So from a financial standpoint, David Tepper or anyone else is going to be just fine, whether he goes 16-0 or 0-16. But as Rick is saying, there is ancillary revenue to be gained, because when you have fans in seats, they're buying obviously drinks and they're buying food and they're buying jerseys and all those things. And then it builds on itself. You can sell sponsorships for a higher amount, and the stadium revenue in particular is mostly kept by the team and not shared collectively like the television money. So that's an area where you can get a leg up as an individual franchisor.
Okay, so you wrote in one of your columns, Eric, that of all of the analysts and executives that you spoke to say Tepper has to assume a public role at least the first year or longer to convey to the fans what the culture of the Panthers will be and what the expectations are for the team on and off the field. Do you agree with that? Because that came from analysts. Do you agree with that, and why is that important, given the fact that we haven't had an owner that's been very verbal or very out there? He's attended the games. We see him on television in the box, but we don't see much of him outside of that.
Well, I think fans are frustrated by the fact that they don't hear from Jerry Richardson. It has been muted a little bit by the fact that you kind of knew where the franchise stood and how it was going to be run. So that allowed him to be much lower profile. But I think that given the circumstances, and I'm talking about the NFL investigation into the allegations of workplace misconduct, sexual harassment, those kinds of things, I think it's probably pretty important for the new owner to come in and just make clear what the organization stands for, because in a lot of ways, particularly internally, they're in a recovery mode. They've been under siege for 6 months.
Let's talk about that. We have 2 minutes left. Let's talk about Mr. Richardson leaves behind a team because he didn't have to sell it, but he's being investigated by the NFL, and he sold it because of allegations of impropriety, bad conduct. Will David Tepper have to come in and clearly articulate the franchise's approach toward that kind of behavior going forward?
I would think he would have to, and there's going to be an investigation out there that's still hanging out there to see what the results are there. I think fans would want to know, just like any business. I mean, and you're an employee of that company. You want to know where he stands. Yeah. And
The city has allocated $75 million for future renovations for Bank of America Stadium, renovations that have not been asked for, but the money is in reserve for that. How long do you think it will take before David Tepper comes to them and says, I want a golden escalator, or I want a bigger scoreboard, or I want a new stadium? How long do you think it'll take?
I'm not even sure he's going to have to go to them. I mean, it sounds like from the political leaders, including the mayor, they're ready to sit down with David Tepper as soon as possible and talk about, what it will take to make sure that the Panthers commit to Charlotte for a long-term contract. So, assuming that doesn't happen, which I think is all but impossible, I think within a year we're going to have a much better idea of what the Panthers want to do and hope to do.
Here's the final question in 10 seconds or less. Is Jerry Richardson a season ticket owner? Does he have a PSL? Does he have a luxury box of his own? Will he be relegated to having to watch the games on television, or can he come to the stadium? Are there any seats for him?
I think he's making a couple $1 billion off the sale of the team. If he needs to, worst case, he'll be able to go to StubHub and get in, I think.
Rick Rothacker with the Charlotte Observer. Eric Spanberg from the Charlotte Business Journal. Thank you both very much. Meeting today in Atlanta.
Thank you.